life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. But the Dr. Stem Show will give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
Welcome and happy 2019 to all of you. Happy New Year. I hope that you're well rested. I was so excited because I had family visiting. So it was 2 weeks of work. You know how it is when you have family members around. But then at the same time, we got to relax. One of the things that I did as I was relaxing in this holidays is one of my sisters, who's a TV buff and, you know, news buff, said to me, "Hey, did you see the news and the documentaries about R. Kelly?" And I said, "No, what's going on?" Well, I'm sure there are many of you that probably don't know. So what I termed this show, because what I wanted to do was to start the show with a bang, with us having open minds and learning about some of the things that are happening in our world and people are not paying attention to what's going on. So this show is titled Surviving R. Kelly, A Deeper Insight. I am going to do a deeper insight on this show, Surviving R. Kelly. If you are on social media, if you are, you know, a person that reads the internet, social media and internet are buzzing with information about R&B singer R. Kelly. He is actually celebrated as one of the greatest R&B singers of all time. And his genre of music of this, you know, gentleman is he has defined himself as a playboy lifestyle. The way that he dances, the way he sings all these deep romantic songs, but the way that he dances, the way that the songs themselves, they tell of the things that he's been doing. So apparently, years ago, he actually was accused of, you know, being with younger girls, 14 years old and up. Yes, 14 years. He was also accused of having, you know, this tendency of hanging around the high schools where you will see the 14, 15, 16-year-olds, the underage girls. And then you also, you know, he will also go to malls and just walk around the mall with, you know, his entourage. And people love R. Kelly just like they love anybody who's a celebrity. So what happens is young and old, when they see him out in the public, they're going to be screaming, and especially women and girls, they're going to be screaming because they love to see him, want to hug him, and to be that close to him is amazing. It was so disgusting to watch the documentaries that they did. It was a three-night event of documentaries that now you can see on Lifetime on R. Kelly. You can see the documentaries on Lifetime. I got to see the documentaries with my family when they were here. It was disgusting to see how he would walk in the malls in our United States of America and walk in the mall, and then these women, these young kids would scream and get excited to see him, and then he would say hello and walk. But as he walked, he gave his bodyguards, you know, directives to go back and give certain young ladies that he would have put his eyes on, give them his personal cell phone number and say, "R. Kelly wants you to call them." I can only imagine the excitement, you know, from these young ladies of having been given the number for R. Kelly, having been given the personal cell phone number for R. Kelly. They just screamed and wanted to talk to him. Interestingly enough, these young ladies also had intentions, not only of being around R. Kelly and getting the phone number, but many of them that were shown in this documentary had ambitions of becoming young stars that could sing or dance with R. Kelly's direction, and they wanted, you know, his leadership and his guidance in order for them, you know, to be famous. Fame. So for the sake of that fame, for the sake of them wanting to be with a person that has done it all because he came, like they say, from nothing to, you know, something. So they figure they can relate to him. And in 10, here's what happened. And I'm just giving you a gist of it so that we can get into the deeper discussions of what's going on, you know, in this documentary, Surviving R. Kelly. What he did was he would take these girls and have sex with the 14-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 27-year-olds, and even ladies that were 30-something years old thought they had something that was special in them, that R. Kelly would look at them and say, you know what, I want you to be mine, and thought that they were the only ones. And he was flying them from all over to come to Atlanta where his house was. And what happened was they ended up having to be kept as slaves, sex slaves, in his house right in this United States of America. It's appalling that he went to court and none of those victims were, you know, that at that time when he went to court would come up and testify against him. The parents did not want to say anything. And guess what, America? They were paid money to not say anything. So, of course, these are people that are coming from, you know, neighborhoods, households that probably could use that money that they were given to be silenced, because we're not talking $100 or $10,000. We are talking hundreds and thousands of dollars that they were paid. That was, you know, a substantive amount of money to be quiet and to not say anything. So what this documentary does, it goes now back to all of those that can talk and paint the picture of the reality of what was going on with these young children, what is still going on with these young children, because he was found not guilty. The, you know, couple times that he went to court, they have not been able to get back into, you know, investigating it deeper and actually following up. No cops have ever knocked on his door and opened the door forcefully to see if there are indeed young girls in there or girls that are being held against their will, which a lot of these women, you know, were saying that they were held against their will. There are over 50 interviews that were, highlighted in this documentary. 50 interviews. And they included, you know, musicians like John Legend, if you're familiar with John Legend. Sparkle, she's also a musician. There was a talk show host, you know, DJ Wendy Williams. She's now a talk show host. There is his ex-wife, Andrea Kelly, who was his dancer, and then he ended up marrying her, but now they're divorced and they have 3 children. There are ex-girlfriends of his that thought that this was actually a relationship that they could pursue, but of course it ended up being something that, you know, was not going anywhere. And the sad thing is, one of the ladies that I remember vividly said, you know what, I didn't even know that I was running into a place where I was going to be forced to have, you know, group sex with teenagers. And then I find out that these young girls were only 14. And it was appalling to her by the time that she found out, but it was already done. And, you know, by the time that she left, the damage has already been done to those children as well as, you know, to her. It is something that is breaking the internet, I'm telling you, because everybody is talking about this and everybody is, you know, watching these shows. Why did I want to have a deeper insight? I wanted to have a deeper insight because, as you all know, my passion and what I do is I work with teenagers and parents, the bulk of my work. And the young ladies that we're taking advantage of are teenagers. And those are the people that this gentleman took advantage of and, you know, violated their rights. So we are going to be taking a deeper look at it so that we can look at the traits of abusers and also the traits of victims. And then we can look at how child abuse affects teenagers especially because they're so young and they're still, you know, in the development stage where they're not able to disseminate what's good and what's not good for them. But we want to take a good look at the traits of abusers. Let me just tell you another thing about this gentleman, R. Kelly. R. Kelly, at a young age as well, around 7 years old, was also violated sexually. The news media and everything, when you read on the internet and interviews by his brother, says it was their sister who was their molester when he was growing up. So what happened was, the way that he's been violating these young ladies and, you know, having sex with these young, you know, ladies and being the predator that he's been, is almost like, you know, he's retaliating to what happened to him as a young man and now having to do it to other young people. Because guess what? Hurt people hurt other people. He was hurt. And as a result, what do we see? We now see him hurting other people. Is it right? No, it's not. But my intention with this show is that for parents, for teenagers, for young ladies, for middle-aged ladies, because we had ladies that were in their 20-something, 30-something, that literally packed their bags and moved to a city near him so that they could be closer to him and date him when they're living closer, just to be closer to him, you know, not realizing, recognizing that they were actually losing it all for a man that did not have value of them, that didn't value them or value, you know, their love, or had the intention to give them the love that they were looking for. And what could they have seen? What could they have done earlier before they got so deep into it and were not able to get out? Is my intention that at least if we go through that, that at least we can educate and inform our young people, the women out there, so that you can recognize a predator when you see one. You can recognize what's not good. And what is this thing about fame? See, I guess growing up in Zimbabwe, it wasn't about, we had the singers, we had the actors and everything, but it wasn't such a thing that we grew up wanting to be so famous and wanting to be at the top that you would lose your mind to want to be famous. And parents would do anything to push their kids so that they are the chosen ones to be around, you know, somebody that's famous, so that their children could be famous or their children could have the opportunities. That is also one of those reasons, one of those things that happened, that we have parents that, you know, I mean, let's say basketball, and if you want your child to play basketball and you see a basketball player, no matter what his record is or what's going on, you want your child to be the one that is mentored or to be given an opportunity by that person. Understandable, because the people, they have the money. It reminds me of Michael Jackson. When I read about surviving R. Kelly and saw these documentaries of how there were rumors of Michael Jackson wanting little kids and, you know, being with young children, this singer is the same thing, disgusting, and wanting to be with the young children. Now on the internet, the buzz is you have people that are saying, well, blame the parents because they allowed their children to go there. Blame these young girls because they knew what was going on and they knew what they were getting into when they got into it and still did not want to say anything when they got the chance to say something or when they got the chance to, you know, run away if they were out with, you know, with him at the shores. So that's their own fault. They knew what was going on. And then we have the majority that understand that no matter how much these young people knew or how these parents knew, they did not know that they are literally serving this monster with their children and saying, you know what, you can do whatever you want with them, violate them. There's not one of those parents. If they had known it, and they had the power to not want their children to go there, that would have still said, I don't care. As long as I get $100,000, I don't care what he does for you. Maybe they are, but I highly doubt it. Because now the parents are speaking up and they did not know until now, when they're getting the correct information, the insight of what was really going on inside his compound, inside his studios in the Atlanta, Georgia area. So let's get into the next segment. Let's talk about the traits of abusers. Again, we're talking today about surviving R. Kelly, a deeper insight.
The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
So in this second segment, we're going to talk about the traits of abusers. The reason why I wanted to talk about the traits of abusers is because we have a lot of people that are going, well, they knew, you know, what they were getting into. But unfortunately, I don't think anybody has ever sat down with them and said, listen, let me just talk to you a little bit about what you will see in a person that is an abusive person. And hopefully this will also help people that are in relationships in general, because most people end up not even knowing that they are in an abusive relationship because they're not aware of some of the traits that, you know, are so typical in an abuser that we're going to be talking about in this segment. Men can be abused by women, and women can be abused by men, but predominantly what has happened for many years is the victims are mostly female. So for the sake of this show, because most of the victims that we're talking about in the R. Kelly, surviving R. Kelly were females, I'm going to be talking about the traits of a male abuser for the sake of those women to, you know what the traits are when you're dating or when you're head over heels falling in love or liking, you know, a man, to see what the traits are of an abuser. The first thing that R. Kelly possesses is charm. An abuser is initially very charming. He will shower his women with praise, with adoration, with attention. He is sweet. You will get flowers. You'll go shopping. He will buy tickets for you to fly to wherever he is. You will stay in the most luxurious hotels and fly first class and get limousines that are picking you up. So, you know, very quickly, you are treated like royal. You're a princess or you're a queen, depending on, you know, what age you are. So that charm does not last long, is what you will see. Because then they court you and you expect all this, you know, treatment to last, but it doesn't last long. So they're charming. The second thing that you have to understand about an abuser is it quickly gets into jealous. See, with this women in Surviving R. Kelly, most of them were saying, you know, they were flown into the places where he would be. They were flown into Atlanta at first before he convinced them to come and live with him, because he had a home where he housed several women. In that house where you had your own room and everything, and then he had this big master bedroom, and then that he would have sex with them individually and then have group sex with them in there. So that charm was a way that he was baiting them, you know, to like him even more, to think that they are special even more. And then it went into jealous. That's another trait that you have to watch out for. So he was looking at these women, and all of them said, by the time that he started saying to me, don't look at other men, I don't want to see you talking to another man. I didn't even know what hit me, because then I was like, what are you talking about? And they didn't understand that. From the bodyguards to the fans to anybody, they were not allowed to look at other men, because he views other men as a threat to the relationship. And then, you know, when they see you flirting or another man flirting with you, then that means that there's an opportunity that they could take you away from him, you know. And it was amazing, because a lot of them, you know, said he literally physically abused them, saying, I know you were looking at him because I saw you looking at him. And yet, you know, these young people said, to be honest, I wasn't even looking at anybody that you would remember looking at someone. That's when you know that there's a jealous, from the time that he starts saying, listen, I know you were looking at this man. I know you said something to this person here. You know already. If you know you didn't intentionally look at someone, you didn't intentionally want to be talking to another person, and you know that this is like taking you from like, what is going on? Then you know you have that phase now where they're jealous of you, and you understand that, boy, I think I'm in trouble here. That's a big sign of knowing what an abuser is, because from that jealousy, most of them, you know, said he literally like slapped the lights out of them and said, I know you were looking at them and I don't like you sleep, you know, talking or looking at another man. And by that time, it's become physical abuse. The other thing that they do very well, the abusers, they're very manipulative. R. Kelly himself is a very intelligent man. They have his high school teachers. They have his teachers that were teaching him music, community leaders that taught him music, church people where he sang music. And I mean, I tell you, if you don't know his music, and you can go on YouTube or Google his music and put R. Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, and just listen to some of the music. I mean, he truly has a voice. One of the most famous songs that he sang, which was another form of manipulation, is I Believe I Can Fly. It's a song that has been sang in churches. It has been sang in schools, you know, college graduations, high school graduations. It has been sung in birthdays. It's just such a musical inspiration, motivational song that a lot of people have used and sang and, you know, and loved him even more, trusted him even more, because it's a song that is between, you know, a church song and, you know, I mean, R&B regular song, but because it's got that churchy spiritual feeling, I Believe I Can Fly, a lot of people, you know, really love him because of that song. And now looking at the documentaries and hearing what these ladies are saying, here's my take on that. I Believe I Can Fly. He was believing that he can do whatever he wants and nobody can touch him and nobody will bring him down, because he can do whatever he wants and he can float right above everybody else, including the law, and nobody can catch him, because he was able to pay people and he was able to continue, you know, pursuing his career, his gift, and giving people the music that for years now, the industry, music industry, did not want to drop his music or to drop him, because he was bringing in hundreds and thousands and millions of dollars, you know, to the industry. So they didn't want to drop him or to even look at, you know, these allegations that were coming through. They decided they were just going to play in a blind eye, because they didn't want to lose the money. That's manipulation. Not only was he able to manipulate the children, the teenagers that came through, he was able to manipulate their parents. He was able to manipulate, you know, the companies that, you know, contracted with him to do the music. He was able to, you know, manipulate the millions of people that have listened to his songs, that love, you know, his music. But most of all, when we're talking about manipulation of an abuser, if you are a female, let me have you understand that his manipulation will be as petty as checking the mileage on your car, following you to the grocery store, and refusing for you to stay late at work or to mingle with people at work or to mingle with people at church. And he wants to know where you're going. He wants to know what time you're coming back. If you are a minute, 5 minutes late, he wants an explanation, or you get a slap in the face of, where were you? And I don't like, you know, for you to lie to me like that. That's how that manipulation comes. And yes, it's shown in these documentaries that he was that control, I mean, that manipulating. The next trait is controlling. That means he wants to know where you're going, who you're going with at all times. He may even, you know, like I said, you know, check your car or follow you to the grocery store. And guess what R. Kelly did? He took these women, put them in his house, and then say to them, you will not go to the bathroom or go to my kitchen and get food without asking me for permission. So you have to call me on the phone and I tell you, yes, you can go to the bathroom. And I tell you, yes, you can get your plate, you know, that will be served, you know, for you, or it will be brought to you. But nobody leaves that room without my permission. The girls explained that they had little empty cans that they would, you know, go to the bathroom in, and then they would have to call him and ask him if they can go and empty it in the bathroom. Ugh, just the thought of it, nasty. But that's when you know that you have a controlling person, because now they literally were slaves, you know, in this day and age. They literally were slaves. And one girl was crying and said, you know, it's not like he would answer the phone when you call to say, I want to go to the bathroom or I'm hungry. No, he would take his own time to answer those calls, and you would have to call many times sometimes before he can answer and say yes. And before that, you can't move. You can't go anywhere. Most of the time, another trait of perpetrators is that, you know, they are evicting themselves. As I said earlier in the show, he was violated when he was young. He was a victim himself. It doesn't excuse, you know, what he does, but it made him justify in his head that it was okay to do because it was done to him, I'm assuming. The one sad thing that I know for sure as a mental health professional is this young man probably not one day in his life went to counseling to try and talk about what happened to him when he was young, to make sense of it and to have a full sense of disclosure, as well as hopefully closure for him to be able to enjoy this gift of music that he was given. I don't think he even went to counseling before. So he is also never at fault when he's a victim, when he's a perpetrator. He's a person that when he loses a job, or when he can't find something, or he doesn't have money, guess who he's going to blame? He's going to blame you on all those things. It's always because of another person or because of you. So he's never at fault. When you get to see that, you've got an abuser on your hands. He's definitely narcissistic, definitely. The whole world revolves around him, you know. So all these little girls were beneath him, and he had control, because now even when he went to court, he was being sued by, relatives of a young 14-year-old that he had held, you know, hostage, quote unquote, right? And there were these young girls that were still going to court, you know, and they're younger, and say they lied about their age, but they would wait by the court side and hold these big signs and says, you are innocent, I'm behind you, And then he ended up again asking his bodyguard to say, give her my personal cell phone number. I want her because she came to court. So, of course, she calls and he says, I just wanted to thank you for coming and supporting me when I was going through the trials. And this young lady was ecstatic because now, you know, he's on my side and he likes me. So definitely she fell victim, but he was the master, you know. Every woman is his slave. It's invigorating for him to know that everyone around him respects him. And he even went to the extent when you watch, you know, the documentary where the young ladies were asked to call him daddy when they were having sex with him so that he can feel in control and remain in control. So we're talking about surviving R. Kelly, a deeper insight. And in this segment, I wanted to talk about the traits of the abuser. Mood swings, you know, I mean, he's easy to anger. So that means, you know, one minute he seems happy, one minute he's sweet, one minute, you know, he's pounding his fist or he's, you know, yelling and screaming at you or being angry and not answering the phones or anything. So that inconsistency. With a deeper evaluation, we probably will find some bipolar, you know, symptoms in there as well. But no matter how hard you try to satisfy him, this kind of a person, you can never satisfy them. And that's why these young ladies were told, listen, sexually, I have a high sex drive, so I like more women. And you can't just be the only one that satisfies me, but I'll provide everything for you. But I need you to work with me because you're going to be having sex with me and other women. And they were like, oh, okay, you know, I will do it. Or they were forced to do it. We don't know because that part wasn't said. But it's critical for you to know that no matter how hard you try, you'll never be able to satisfy him. His main goal is to isolate his victims. And R. Kelly did this very well because he isolated his victims from family and friends so that they were totally dependent on him. The family will cause trouble, of course, because they will ask questions and they will challenge him in his willingness to isolate them. So he wants to disconnect all his victims from, you know, talking to family members, to friends and outside people. You know, you've got an abuser in there and everyone is out to get him. He doesn't trust anybody. So you start to say, oh, you know, my mom was saying, you know, maybe we can do this year. And all of a sudden he goes off because then he doesn't trust anyone and will say, nope, for the sake of my business and what I do, I don't believe in that. And I don't want to do that. And you know that, here comes some, you know, hypersensitivity. He's becoming very sensitive. So, you know, you have, you know, an abuser. The other thing is, you know, quite a significant number of, you know, people that are abusers, you know, have been reported that they will talk a lot about wanting to kill you before they let you go. And at first, women take that as, oh, I guess he loved me so much that he doesn't want me to be with someone. No, they literally mean that. And that means you could be in danger and that could end up being your demise because they have said it over and over, I'll kill you before I let you go. The tone of voice, even that statement alone is not a good statement. But at the same time, he will swear to say, I'll never hit you again. But unless, you know, you say something or you do something that you know that I don't like or it's a violation of me, then I don't know what I'll do. But I promise you, I'm sorry. And it's over and over again. That begins what we call the cycle of abuse. When that starts happening now where they apologize and then you go through the same cycle again and then they abuse you again. And then, you know, it's a cycle. You know, a domestic violence cycle. So I hope these tips, you know, of traits of abusers will help some young person or adult that's out there that's looking for fame, talking to a man, but seeing these traits and understanding what those traits are. We're going to go to the third segment. And in the third segment, I want to talk about the traits of victims as well as how to get help after understanding how it affects teenagers.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
So now let's talk about, traits of victims. Let me just take you back on, if you haven't watched it, one of the traits of the victims that were in, that R. Kelly was pursuing, as I said, they were young ladies, that their parents are saying, oh my dear, they have great voices from the time that they're young, and all they want to be is to be able to sing like Beyonce. You know, Beyonce started when she was young, but they want to be little Beyonces, they want to be little R. Kellys that want to grow up and be there. So that desire to become, famous and to become, somebody is one trait that these young people had, that they couldn't see anything else for them or their parents except the fact that, they had an opportunity that had, come across, that they could now be able to pursue their careers. They would be able to pursue what they love doing. But let's talk about, in general, the victims, especially the women victims. If we're talking about the young victims, one of the things I'm thinking of is that fame. But then I'm also thinking of a young girl whose self-esteem is very low. However, the one thing that brings them out is singing or the admiration of this young gentleman that was famous. And they get to see this person, and all of a sudden, having his phone number is power, is a ticket to say, I knew I was special, even though everybody else in the school, the whole world didn't think that I was a nobody. Now I am a somebody. So it was exciting to be able to be that kind of person. And then it got to be scary when they were told, you cannot tell a soul, not even your sister, not your brother, that you're meeting with me or that you're talking to me or that you and I are having this intimate moment. You are not to tell a soul. And in that instance, a lot of teenagers, as you know, they're also into anybody who will give them stuff, who will give them money, who will take it off them. So this gentleman lured these teenagers as well and gave them money like they have never held in their hands before. Because for a teenager, even if you give them $1,000 and they're living in a poverty-stricken, area, or even with parents where their parents are working, hard-working parents, and they can't afford to give their child $1,000, just pocket money, they get this $1,000 that they can just spend, at their leisure. Of course, they're going to fall into that. How does that happen? It's because if we don't teach our teenagers the value of themselves, the value of money, the power in valuing, how another person would just say, I'll give you $1,000 and in return, you can be with me and, do these things with me, when they're not valued for who they are or, what it is that they can do with their brains and not their bodies. It's a different thing, okay? Here's one trait that is common between the adult victims and the young victims. Isolation. most of them feel that, you know, no one understands them. They tend to be isolated, you know, and the isolation usually is out of fear of what friends can say, or, you know, I mean, just being uneasy around people. And what happens is when they get this person, remember now we said, you know, the abuser is the person that will, you know, charm you and will want to do everything for you and give you the world per se. When they first start talking to you, it's easy for an isolated person to feel, you know, to fall into that trap, because then all of a sudden, you know, they feel like somebody does understand them and everybody else doesn't. Now, if you know teenagers, or you were a teenager yourself, that's the number one thing where teenagers want to be, you know, understood. And all they say is, my parents don't understand me. And any adults that is close to them, they don't understand me. So, of course, they meet somebody like this, you know, predator that is luring them into, I understand you. I can give you everything that you need. They're going to run into that. They also judge themselves very harshly, you know. So a person that is easy to manipulate, or that could be, you know, fall victim into this, is that person, like I said earlier on, that has low self-worth, that judges themselves, that talks to them and to themselves and always think that I'm not good enough. I don't think I'm capable of, you know, achieving the big things that I, you know, other people are doing. So because they're also a person, as we said in the beginning, where they're isolated and feel, you know, like nobody understands them, it's easy, you know, for them to feel hopeless and helpless at times, where I'm no good. So then finding a person that will say, yes, you're good. Yeah, of course you're good. And I'm going to help you be good. And I promise you that that promise is what they hold on to. And that promise never comes, because then an abuser uses that as a trap, knowing that that's what you're looking for. So, of course, they're going to tell you that, and then they never deliver. The other trait of a victim is that she lives her life as a victim. You know, again, similar to the abuser, blames other people for their circumstances, is attracted to people who are controlling and people who like to take charge so that they don't have to take charge of their lives. A woman like that often also finds confusion, you know, between love and control. It's difficult for them to understand that this person has actually gone beyond, you know, the boundary of loving me, but now they're controlling me. So it's difficult for them to disseminate between that. If they're getting, like I said before, the things, and they're getting, you know, the hotels, and they're flying all this, all those things that everybody works hard to gain, and they can get that without doing much, is what they say to themselves. It's easy for them, you know, to want to live that life, but then blame everybody else if things are not working out, you know, for them. So they can be responsible or irresponsible as far as their behavior is concerned, you know, where they might not be able to be the kind of people that will take the time to say, what is my role in these things that are happening in my life, that they tend to want to sit back and sometimes want to, you know, not take responsibility of what it is that, you know, is going on in them. But then the other thing that is so disturbing is that if they are told by the abuser that it's their fault, they literally believe that it's their fault that, you know, he got to hit me. It's their fault, because then you forced me to do this to you because you were talking to this man, because I saw you looking at this person. And they believe that yes, there are things that I'm doing that I need to change so that, you know, my partner does not get so irritated, upset with me, or think that I am doing these things intentionally. So that's a big thing right there. They also have difficulty sometimes with trust and commitment, especially, you know, in love relationships. So when, you know, an abuser comes in and says, well, I don't want you to be talking to people. I don't want you doing these things without me. I don't want you. To them, they think, oh, the focus is on me. Then that means, you know what, I'm being liked, I'm being loved. And, you know, they want me to be their own, you know, have me to themselves. So that means I'm very special. And this is the inner language that they talk to themselves and, you know, are thinking this, but are valuing the way that, you know, their abuser is saying, you know, I need you to be by my side. I need you to be around me at all times, because then I want you to live within this realm of boundaries that I have for you. And if you go outside these boundaries or don't do as I say, then of course, you know, there will be problems between us. And they literally would justify and explain to you that, yeah, this is what my boyfriend does, or this is what my husband does. But I, you know what, I see what they're saying, because I can see, you know, where I'm at fault and where I do this, and will justify it until they actually make believers out of everybody that is listening to them, when it's all false, you know, beliefs that they're having. An abused individual also has a strong need to be in control. But the abused, as I said, keeps them locked down, you know, because then it's about what the abuser wants. It's about the demands of what the abuser wants. And also to the ladies, that sometimes it becomes a way where they tell you that you cannot work and you cannot go to school and you cannot do this because I want you to stay at home, and this is your job and this is your role and this is what I want you to do. But you can tell the excessiveness of that control, that is too excessive, and it doesn't leave you any room to breathe at all. It doesn't leave you any room to be yourself at all. Then you know that you do have a problem on your hands. You've got an abuser on your hands. One of the next trait that I have seen in abused women, which is in the victims, is the denial of how traumatic this kind of situation is to them, how detrimental it is to their emotions and everything. When we talk about denying their feelings, they deny their feelings to themselves and to anyone. When we're talking about denying feelings, we're also talking about, you know, those women that will stay in for the children. Oh, I would rather live and be in this situation for my children's sake, because my children would never understand. I could never explain to them why I left their father. So I would rather stay and be abused and lose myself than move, because then I'll have to explain to the children. I've had to do what I call a rude awakening to parents and said, you know what? Here's your decision at 5 years old, when your child is 5, 6 years old, and you say to yourself, oh, I cannot leave their father because, you know, I don't want to be explaining to that. But now, newsflash, you have to explain to them why you stayed. You were abused, you were bleeding all over, and you were locked in the room, or locked yourself in the room, because you were so sad and depressed and you couldn't stand your father, and they watched all this, but you couldn't move and take care of yourself so that your children wouldn't have to witness and see what they saw or heard what they heard. And all of a sudden, I have parents that will look at me and say, wait a minute, you mean they saw that? We never argued in front of the children. Or when we did, it was so short that we made sure that, you know, we didn't continue to fight in front of them once we see them. And to me, that's a denial of feelings right there, that is so apparent, that they deny, you know, that this is a problem that they have. They also, you know, can be impulsive. And it's one of those things that when I talk about, in, you know, women being impulsive, it's also at that moment where I tell women that sometimes you do not want to provoke somebody that you know is dangerous and could be hurtful to you, and you keep testing the boundaries and you keep pushing, you know, their boundaries instead of taking care of yourself and not being in those situations. And hopefully if you're strong enough with the safety plan, you can get yourself into a safe place rather than continue to, you know, be around, you know, that person. But it's such a sensitive place to be in, a victim, in a victimized place, that you actually literally will believe everything that the threats that are coming in. Because R. Kelly was telling these women that if you do go and talk to anybody, I will hurt your families or I will hurt you. And they believed that because they didn't have a sense of safety, that they knew that they would be safe. So one of the things that they go through is also, you know, a lack of self-confidence and believing in themselves and believing in, you know what, this man here, of course, I can get away and he will not hurt anyone because I will have found safety. If you can relate to any of the symptoms that I've talked about today, I want to make sure that you understand that if you notice them, do not just run away or start saying to your husband, to your boyfriend, oh, these things that Dr. Sim is talking about, I know they happen in our relationship, so you are abusing me, because that is not safe for you to approach it in that manner. I recommend that people go and find a professional that you can sit down with and talk about these things together with your husband or by yourself, to get that help and get that clarification with a professional, and then put together a plan of you leaving, you know, that relationship if that's what you decide to do and that's the safest thing to, you know, for you to do. The effects of child abuse on teenagers is very disturbing, because they grow up looking and seeing, you know, abuse as normal because this is what they're seeing, even though they know that it's wrong. But then it becomes normal that there are dangers that they could become abusers, you know, themselves. Teenagers who are exposed to, you know, abuse, whether sexual, mental, physical, spiritual abuse, are also very prone to experiencing mental health issues, you know, that can be actually greater risk, you know, because then they might, after having the mental health issues, guess what they might do? Self-medicate and become, you know, addicts. You be addicted, you know, use addictions, you know, try to commit suicide or even commit suicide, struggle with post-traumatic, you know, stress disorder, PTSD, because of what happened, you know, when they were young. The other thing that we have to be cognizant of is, like R. Kelly, we had R. Kelly who was abused himself, and then he became an abuser. And that's the biggest risk that we go through with, you know, children that are abused, because then if that's not taken care of, if that's not resolved or talked about in treatment with the professional, then they grow up with the emotions and the anger of wanting revenge, of wanting to know and understand, why are you doing this to me? That unbeknownst to them, they in turn abuse other people, you know, unknowingly, because they struggled when they were young. So it's very, very important that if you or your child or anybody that you know is going through, you know, any of the symptoms that we talked about, the traits that we talked about, that they seek, you know, professional help. If they are in the school and their children, it's important that you also talk to their school counselors so that they can, you know, be linked to a counselor that comes to the school and work with them in the school. It is important, and I mean important, for parents to be cognizant of, you know, the situations that they are in, because it is your acceptance of staying in there for the sake of the children that ends up being detrimental to your children in the long run. R. Kelly's parents, the mother was, you know, a church. She used to sing in the church and was gone all the time. So the sister apparently was the one that was taking care of them at all times. So of course, him and his younger brother say they fell victim to their sister because, you know, she's the one that was in charge of them. She's the one that had to take care of them. So it's very important that you as parents also are aware of the people that you're leaving with your children, that are taking care of your children, that are looking after your children. How safe are they? You know, instead of seeking fame and running after, you know, these famous people, do a little bit more research and figure out if they're the ones that, you know, R. Kelly would not allow the parents to be in the studios, would not allow them to be in his room when he had the children, and yet there were minors in there. Big sign. At that point, call law enforcement and take your child away from there, because they're not supposed to be in that room. If you as a parent cannot be in that room with a minor. The disturbing thing is some parents even knew that he had already been accused, you know, of these charges in, you know, and gone to court. But because he was acquitted, they thought, well, we're still safe because he's been acquitted of these charges. Well, there's no smoke with that fire. So if he goes to court and they say something and then they get settlement outside, even if the court throws it out, the fact that there were facts in there that were presented in that court says a lot about that person. They are not safe to have your child around. Find another producer, find somebody else that can help your child to become famous and to take a path, the right path that is safer, that they can take rather than go after these predators. Surviving R. Kelly, a deeper insight, was the focus of our show today. This is Dr. Stem. As I always say, be encouraged and encouraging. And don't forget, professional, professional, professional. Look for professional services to deal with anything that has to do with domestic abuse or being a victim.